Before we sink our teeth into this week's film, I want to give another shout out to our buds Dion and Blake over at Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers. You know what I consider to be a raw deal, Cargill? Like a real raw deal?
The fact that Arby's no longer has the 5 for 5,
yes,
roast beef sandwiches.
That's some bullshit. Don't get me started on that. But I was talking about when you go to a movie sleepover as a kid and there wasn't a stack of VHS tapes that were rented from the local video store, or if there was no WopCorn. You ever had WopCorn?
That sounds really offensive.
It's not. It is.
It sounds offensive,
and this is how I'm going to skirt. I'm going to skirt the controversy.
Sidestep the concept there.
Sidestep the landmine is that it's a big bowl of popcorn with malted milk balls in it. It is like diabetes on top of your diabetes. Hey, dog, I heard you like diabetes, so we gave you diabetes with your diabetes. It was like my favorite thing to eat at movie sleepovers. And Dion and Blake are reliving their childhoods with this nostalgic podcast covering a huge assortment of genres. Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers is like the spiritual cousin of junk food cinema, but the cousins that remembered the goddamn WopCorn. Jesus, guys, come on. So after you're done listening to our show, go check out Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers at saturdaysleepovers.podwitz.com or subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, and just about everywhere podcasts are available. You can also follow them on Facebook and Twitter. Junkies, to the summer of 1986. One junkie summer rolls on here at Junk Food Cinema, the cult and exploitation film cast so good, it just has to be fattening. I'm your host, Brian Salisbury, and joining me, as always, is my friend and co-host, Mr. C. Robert Cargill. That's you? Good job. Good job. Is that the kind of witty...
Your friend, co-host, and...
Oh, I'm sorry. Lieutenant and Megaforce.
Okay. Oh, all right. Hi, everybody.
Which is highly important as we have time traveled back to 1986, where that was a thing, apparently.
Well, it was actually not a thing in 86, except every once in a while on HBO, because it came out in the summer of 82.
That's still a thing. It's still a thing. This is, of course, our show where we are going to break down all of our favorite movies from the... Definitely not the best summer of movies.
No.
But the most weird and interesting and perfect for junk food cinema summer of movies.
Yeah, no, of the 80s, there are three summers that really stand out. And if you pick a decade, typically you can pick 3 years that stand out for very different reasons. And 82 is the very best year, very best summer. 1984 stands as... trying to recreate everything that was great about 82 and getting so much of it right. Summer of 84 is so much fun. Summer of 86 is throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks. It's the end of an era, the beginning of a new era that doesn't realize that's where it is. And there's so much junky goodness. There's a couple of honest to God great classics in this summer. There's just several things. There are several bits that could not exist in any other time at all. And then there's just all this wonderful junk that is the epitome of everything we love about the 80s. In various ways, and so many great films from this summer bombed, and so many would go on to be forgotten, and then you have a couple that just are classics, like absolute classics, but some that bombed would go on to become classics, which is what's so great about this summer. It's such a weird year, and so much like 1982. Like in 1982, The Thing bombed, but is held up as one of the greatest movies ever made.
Yeah.
In 86, we have, you know, one of the same guy, John Carpenter, directed another bomb that is held as a classic with Big Trouble in Little China. And then we have gems like today's movie,
yes,
that are not remembered so well and are not the best of this actor's oeuvre, if we will.
From an actor who can't pronounce the word oeuvre, we're going to dig into the oeuvre of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I am the governor of California.
I do not know what oeuvre is.
And that is more of my oeuvre.
I don't think you can make an oeuvre without breaking some eggs.
It's like, no one tell him what oeuvre means. Before we get into what this week's movie is, I want to remind you guys.
Before we do that, Schwarzenegger was on Reddit today.
that That's a sentence I never thought I would hear in my lifetime.
He's on Reddit a lot, actually.
What?
No. He's a Redditor, and he pops on Reddit every once in a while. And there was a Conan fact yesterday. And
Conan the Upvoter, the third film in the franchise.
He was talking about someone had talked about Conan the Barbarian, about how Arnold Schwarzenegger was too big to be able, his muscles were too big to be able to sword fight properly, so he had to lose weight. And lose some of his definition for the movie. And Schwarzenegger came in to debunk it and say, actually, this is a chance to break this myth, and told why he actually, why he actually changed his physique, which was kind of the same thing, but not actually accurate. Like, he already apparently. But the thing is, when you read this, he even writes like he talks, which is beautiful. So you read it and you hear Arnold in your head and it's perfect.
I hope to God that he types the phrase things of this nature a lot.
He does.
Oh,
occasionally it
my
comes
crumb.
Up, things of
That's
this nature.
Awesome.
And there was a phrase like that he uses a lot. I forget which one it was, but yeah, it was like, this is so clearly Arnold.
Just a lack of contractions because he doesn't quite understand what they are. That's another thing we determined in the course of doing this show is I don't think Arnold Schwarzenegger can do contractions.
Yeah. No, one of the best things that he does is like he'll go on for self-promotion stuff and he'll do that every once in a while, but he hangs out in the fitness subreddits and gives words of encouragement to people. And whenever people tell stories about how they're trying really hard and having a hard time, he'll come in and give them advice and cheer them on, and knowing full well that people are like, dude, I can't fail now. Fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger told me I could do it. I have to fucking do this. He's actually one of my favorite Redditors. It's pretty cool what he comes in and does.
Redditor salvation.
But he totally writes exactly how he talks, which is the best part of it.
I would expect nothing less. Guys, if you want to hear us talk about our favorite actors and things of this nature in the past.
And things of this nature in the summer of 1986 and like things like this.
And you can go back and find those episodes on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter @JunkFoodCinema and like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/JunkFoodCinema. A quick Patreon update. We are but mere dollars away from our $200 an episode flex goal, in which case Junk Food a la Mode will become a real thing where we review movies that are in theaters at that time, which I think is going to be a lot of fun. And I want to give a shout out to our latest $10 pledge, Mr. Mark McDade. Thank you very much for helping keep the lights on quite literally here at Junk Food Cinema. Well, enough standing on ceremony. Let's dive right into this. We are talking about 1986, the unfortunately titled, possibly unfortunate everythinged, Raw Deal.
Schwarzenegger got a raw deal, and now he means business.
I thought I might get lucky. And now, it's your turn.
Raw Deal.
Otherwise known as, in Germany, as what?
In Germany?
There was the City Cobra. We had this a little junky information that came from one of our junkies. Apparently, in Germany, Cobra was released as a movie called The City Cobra. And as a result, Raw Deal was released as The City Shark.
I don't even... Germany, God damn it. You're too weird for me to understand. And this is not a new thing, but this is just the nail in the coffin. I don't understand you. I don't understand... So this is called Cobra Shark.
No, this is the City Shark. And Cobra was the City Cobra.
Okay, wait a minute. So were they trying to set up like a children's storybook where like a City Cobra and a Country Cobra would like switch places for a while? Because now I kind of want to see the movie where Cobra and Mark, I always want to say Lemansky, but that's the name of a gangster in the movie. What is it? Mark Kaminsky. Switch places, and Cobra goes to the country to become a North Carolina sheriff for fucking whatever reason, and Mark Kaminsky goes to fight an army of maniacs.
Oddly enough, both Stallone and Schwarzenegger have played country sheriffs.
Yes, they have. Copland and what's the Last Stand? Yeah. No, you're right. And what's sad is I knew immediately which two movies
yes,
you were talking
you
about.
Yes, you did.
Without the IMDb ticker even right in front of me. I was like, oh, yeah, that one. No, this is Raw Deal. This is a movie, what's the nicest way to put this, that absolutely should not be. Like, there's so much about this movie that's just like, I don't understand I don't understand this. I don't get why this is the plan. I don't know if this is supposed to be facilitating a bigger message. I don't, because it came out in such a weird time in Schwarzenegger's career. This is post the Conan movies.
Yes.
This is post Terminator. And post Commando, but pre.
Well, is it? I could have swore Commando came after this.
85 was Commando, so this was the film directly after Commando. So the only thing that audiences have seen Schwarzenegger play so far are emotionless robots, emotionless barbarians, and a guy who can literally withstand an entire army trying to kill him at one time and quipping as much as he's speaking any other piece of dialogue. Probably the best one-liners in all of Schwarzenegger's career are in Commando. Because they're nonstop.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. In fact, if you watch the Commando Blu-ray that they put out several years back with the special edition, there's actually...
Which seems like the kind of thing you and I would both own.
I own it.
I do, too.
Yeah. There's actually a five-minute deleted scene, which is just every single one-liner that Schwarzenegger uttered when he kills the guy at the end. With the let off some steam.
Let off some steam.
Is one of 50 fucking things that he said.
That's called honing your craft.
Yeah. They worked very, very, very hard to get that line perfect.
Schwarzenegger is the Stanley Kubrick of one-liners, man. He will just keep doing it until he gets it right.
Well, and that's, you know, ultimately that's the story that came out of Batman and Robin was that... That was his whole thing when he was brought in to play Mr. Freeze, because they had Patrick Stewart in as Mr. Freeze, and then Schwarzenegger came in, and they're like, holy shit, we can get Schwarzenegger to play a villain? This has to happen. And so they signed him instead, and then he came in to rewrite the script, because I need one-liners.
I need to do ice puns for 97 minutes.
And that's exactly what he does, and it's clearly him, like, still thinking it's 1986, and adding in ice pun after ice pun after ice pun, and that movie gets so bad, weighed down with it. And clearly, you know, you see that stuff in everyone else's dialogue.
See, and that's what's interesting is, one, they do it so much in Batman and Robin that you can start to see the cracks where he just runs out of ammo and throws the gun at him. My favorite being, if revenge is a dish best served cold, put on your Sunday's finest. And you're like, what? Wait, hold on. Wait, I shouldn't have to backtrack through a Schwarzenegger one-liner to figure out what he means. You know, there shouldn't be, like, depth to it.
The closest of a non sequitur of a one-liner that I can come up with for that was that great line from Death Race, where it's, I'll show you who shits on the sidewalk.
But that, it's like, that's like, okay, that's what she thinks the ultimate, like, humiliation is when people have to shit on the sidewalk. That's weird. That's very weird. But at least, there's not two parts to it that don't connect. At least it's like, wait, Sunday, revenge, cold. But you know what's, why all of that is relevant to Raw Deal is the one-liners in Raw Deal almost seem like they're making fun of a trend that he hadn't quite established yet. They, like, some of them are so off the wall and bizarre that you're like, wait, is this can't be Schwarzenegger making fun of himself, because none of this movie feels jokey. None of this movie feels tongue-in-cheek. It feels like it's played very straight, but somebody's trying to get a message out like Lassie. Like, what are you trying to tell us, movie? And one of them is, let's go through the story here a little bit of Raw Deal.
Just a little bit.
Because there's not much there.
Not only is there not much there, it's a pastiche of cliches, even for 1986, which is kind of interesting, because this movie really does take a bunch of tropes to set up some action scenes and set up, you know, some tough guy scenes.
Yeah.
But in a way that you're just like, where was this going? Like with Cobra, Cobra is very thin on story, but Cobra is very big on visual storytelling.
Yes.
Like
a lot of stuff
happens. They just don't explain it to you. Raw Deal's the opposite.
It's very much the opposite, because all of the things that are wrong with the story of Raw Deal are also wrong with Cobra, but Cobra makes up for it by having things that are visually very appealing and very arty cinematography and doing these really creative things with stunt work and with cinematography, and that's just absent. That's absent from Raw Deal. So Raw Deal, its strength comes from how much you are into those tropes. Like, you really have to enjoy the tropes of, like, low budget kind of bargain basement action storytelling or action filmmaking, especially mob movies. Like that's really all this is appealing to, is the audience that, which happens to be right in my wheelhouse of like really cheaply made gangster movies,
yeah.
Which is something that I very much enjoy, whether it's like the Franco Nero Polizzi Tecchi movies, whether we're talking about, you know, Lee Marvin, blaxploitation, whatever it may be, like that is something that I'm really into. So I think that's probably why when I first saw Raw Deal, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe that I haven't heard of the Schwarzenegger movie. I can't believe that I'm only now seeing it for the first time and how great this is. I really enjoy it. And by great, I don't mean academically so, because it is not. This is essentially the elevator pitch of this movie is, imagine Arnold Schwarzenegger as the world's worst undercover cop who doesn't understand what being undercover means at all. Because the whole thing about this movie is he's sent undercover to infiltrate a Chicago mob. He's actually given two missions. One is to find out who in the FBI is the mole, the leak, who's giving them information. And two is to basically just kill them all.
To get revenge.
It's a revenge plot. It's being sent undercover to get revenge, which doesn't require a lot of finesse. It's basically the first time you're next to the guy I want killed, just kill him. If that's your only mission, there's no reason to keep getting, like, to finesse your way deeper and deeper into the organization, especially if you're going to do nothing. And I literally mean nothing to try and find out the identity of the mole, because he doesn't. He doesn't at any point try to figure out who the guy is. In fact, at the end of the movie, he looks up after giving everyone in the room a big lead hug. He looks up and goes, oh, there you are. And then kills him. It's like it fell into his lap. He's the worst. This is 2 years after Miami Vice hit television. And Miami Vice is all about these two cops who are constantly going undercover. And to be fair, aren't necessarily the best at it, but at least they're like, they have a mission. They're trying to, something they're trying to achieve.
That's the point of Miami Vice. I mean, the point was, yeah, they weren't the best at it, that they fucked up a lot, that they were just human beings, that they were cops. It was this gritty nihilistic realism that Michael Mann was into in this era. It is, well, let's face it, that Michael Mann is mostly into.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very strange. This movie feels like an echo of that, like it's trying to be that, but doesn't quite understand what makes Miami Vice that.
Yes.
And
it thinks the suits. It thinks this is a movie that literally thinks that the only thing you need to do to be Miami Vice, have somebody go undercover and wear suits a lot. That's it.
Yeah.
That's what it thinks all of Miami Vice is. And in fact, Schwarzenegger commented once in an interview that this was the first movie where he got to wear like nice clothes, because all of his costumes and movies before this were like kind of homeless chic going on. It was like the stuff he stole from the punk in Terminator, or loincloths for Conan. Or it's like,
yeah, because he totally forgot that he was in The Long Goodbye.
Right. Where he, what's the first, again, what's the only time he's on screen? This is interesting to this point. The only time he's in screen in The Long Goodbye, what's he do? Takes his clothes off.
He takes his
nice suit off.
That's true.
So I guess this is the first time he was able to actually wear the nice clothing. So starting at the top, the opening of this. Oh yeah,
There's one point that needs to be made. This movie is called Raw Deal.
Yeah, because it refers to. Yeah, there's not a raw deal in this
exactly.
movie.
Like,
yeah,
there's no raw deal.
No.
There's no deal. There's nothing raw about it. Like, this is clear. This is much like Sorceress. It's one of those things that sounds cool that means nothing.
And I remember we talked about that a little bit last week, and I went into this viewing and I was like, okay, I'm going to go undercover and try and find the raw deal in this movie. And I figured out what I think they're referring to. Even if you want to make the argument, though, that because it's set up in this movie that Arnold Schwarzenegger's character, Mark Kaminsky, was a former FBI agent who was, even if you want to make the argument that he got a raw deal when he was thrown out of the bureau for savagely beating a suspect, even if you want to make that argument, I would argue that's not necessarily a raw deal, but maybe more like due process, but maybe that didn't sound like a good title for the movie either. Even if you want to make that argument, that happened before the movie even fucking started.
Yeah.
You can't name an action movie.
So now he's a small town sheriff.
You can't name an action movie after the thing that happened in the wings before the credits started a rolling.
That's as close as you get, the whole raw deal thing. And the, hey, I'll put in a good word for you that we'll get to here in a moment.
But if you by this train of logic, Die Hard would be called Separating from Holly. Like, you can't name the fucking action movie after the thing that starts...
And that's the thing, is this title makes no goddamn sense. At least in Cobra, he is the Cobra.
He's the Cobra, and it's like, okay, that's a little reductive, because the whole movie's not really, like, it's about something bigger, but that's fine. Whatever, I'll go with that. But, yeah, and then the opening of the movie, the actual opening of the movie, is this, like, this mob assassination in the woods that feels very much like a 70s action film, where it's like you have someone in witness protection and all of the guys guarding them are sieged and murdered, and the witness is murdered, and it feels like that's where in Miami Vice it'd be like it cut from that murder to do 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 do, and then we'd see the opening. It cuts instead of from that to an episode of Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah.
That's how Raw Deal goes from this, which is kind of hardcore, to this opening that begs the question of just how tolerant the citizenry of country town North Carolina used to be, because apparently they asked no questions when an Austrian showed up to be their new sheriff. They were just like, clearly he's from around here. We're fine with people that aren't from around here. So, yeah, you're the new sheriff. And they kind of do the thing they'd end up doing in Terminator 2, where they play with expectation a little bit, because you see a cop on a motorcycle and then you see Schwarzenegger in plain clothes chasing him, and you're like, why is Schwarzenegger chasing this cop? And then it turns out the guy he's chasing is impersonating a cop, handing out phony tickets to shake people down, and he's arrested by plain clothes. And by arrested, I mean nearly incinerated. Probably the greatest end to a chase ever, where he just gets ahead of him, throws gasoline on the ground, smokes a cigar, waits for him to come by, and then like something out of a Roadrunner cartoon, like lights the street on fire so he crashes. And that's the opening of the movie. So we come for the Schwarzenegger shoot 'em up, stay for the Dukes of Hazzard intro. Why not? So yeah, like we said, there's no Raw Deal, but we do find out that he used to be, an FBI agent, and the move to this small town was kind of forced upon them and is really taking a toll on his wife. And let's talk about the scene,
Jesus Christ,
with the wife that may be the most infamous, bizarre thing in this whole movie. So this is the moment where he walks in, he has an argument with his wife, who's making a cake with the word shit on it, just she's in frosting, just, you know, the word shit. And she gets mad and throws the cake at him, and then he, with a stone face, says,
"You should not drink and bake."
And again, if this was played with any kind of, I don't know, self-effacing humor, maybe I would understand it, but it's played so seriously that I'm like, is that a one-liner? Does that count? Judges, can we get a ruling on that? Yeah, it does. Okay, that's apparently a one-liner.
I don't think that's a one-liner as much as it's trying to explain what the fuck is going on in this scene. Because at that moment, you're like, oh, she's supremely unhappy and she's intoxicated. That's why she's having this emotional outburst.
As if the vodka in her hand, the like slurring her words, and the throwing stuff around, like because she's lost motor control. Like none of that indicated she was drunk. We had to have Arnold spell it out when a cake flies across the room. So the most action we've seen so far is a car chase that ends in flames, and the second most action-packed thing that's happened so far is a cake has flown across the room. We're in a Raw Deal, guys. This is the movie. This is the movie we're watching. And then who should show up but one of my favorite character actors, actually, Darren McGavin, who...
You do love Darren McGavin.
That guy. Darren McGavin, most of you probably know as the dad from Christmas Story, but has been in some of the weirdest, most wonderful cult films of all time, including the 1990 Captain America starring Matt Salinger.
I just can't believe you dropped a Pune movie.
Yep, including Dead Heat. This is a guy who is constantly turning up in those movies that you're maybe not admitting to everyone right away that you love, but you totally love. And he plays Schwarzenegger's former boss at the FBI. Turns out one of the guys protecting the witness that was murdered was Darren McGavin's son, so he sends him undercover to the Chicago mob. One, he does say, you know, to find out who the leak is, because somebody's obviously supplied information on when their safe house was. And mostly, though, it's just get in there and kill the head of the mafia. And this is not sanctioned. I'm paying for this myself. No one will ever know you're doing this.
So get the most expensive suits you can.
Yep.
Throw around as much money as humanly possible.
Yep.
and fill 90 minutes of time.
Yeah, and be Donnie Brasco unnecessarily and worm your way deeper and deeper into this organization when literally all I told you to do was find out who this guy is, which you don't do at any point during the movie. Do you even try to do and kill this guy who you're around several times and don't murder for some reason. So again, worst undercover agent of all time. And I just, the thing that bugs me about it, and the thing that's so crazy, and again, I love movies that should not be, and this is definitely a movie that should not be, is that he is actually doing a better job of helping the mob achieve their goals than he is disrupting them. Because he starts off the movie by taking out their competition so that he can, like, get in good with them. And then he goes so far as to actually give them the idea to bomb a police station to facilitate a heist.
Yes.
Which could have easily killed so many cops. And he's just like, why don't you use a bomb? You could, you know, bomb one police station and you could use a bomb threat to break into the other one. It's like, yeah, but that actually, okay, I don't know if, like, when you were in the FBI, maybe you didn't work and maybe you were a linguistics guy. Maybe you, like, looked for Austrian double agents. I don't know. But one thing you probably shouldn't do as an undercover is help the bad guys kill cops. Like, maybe don't do that. And it's so weird because earlier in the movie, we see him, like, Robert Davi, who is quickly climbing up the ladder on his way to JFC Hall of Fame, is this violent gangster who doesn't like Schwarzenegger, but they're, like, teamed up together.
See, this is, and I was waiting to get to this because Robert Davi is the thing that makes me actually really like this movie. Like,
he's great in this.
Up until this point, this is one of those goofy, up until this point, this movie reminds me of the Italian films that Fred the Hammer Williamson used to make.
So funny that you mentioned that. Yeah.
Because that's what these, it feels like something like Mr. Mean, where it's like, we're going to cobble together this basic kind of concept so that we can shoot a bunch of scenes of me looking cool and then killing a lot of people. Can we make a movie that lets us do that? That's exactly how Raw Deal feels up until the introduction of Robert Davi. And Robert Davi is playing a cliche here as well. Again, these are cobbled together ideas. He's playing, you know, the second in command that doesn't trust this undercover guy, except that Robert Davi is presented as entirely competent. Like, he gets right away that this is clearly not some gangster from Florida, that this guy's full of shit.
What was your first clue?
He is an undercover.
How did I get found out?
He's a
cover
cop, and he just knows right away, and he instantly sets about doing everything right to figure out who he is. And, like, he's always giving him the stink eye and wonderfully giving him the stink eye.
Yeah.
And Robert Davi is kind of more likable than Schwarzenegger is here.
He kind of is, because Schwarzenegger's kind of a dick throughout this whole movie. Like, a couple of times he's that guy who walks into an interview way too confident that he's going to get the job, and you're just like, dude, fuck you, really? Like, I can't even hold a conversation with you.
He spends the entire movie, like, trying to bang a chick that he's not trying to bang. And
what the fuck with the platonic like interest? Is that a thing? A like interest? Because Schwarzenegger has a like interest in this movie.
Yeah.
That I don't, because when I first, when that first happens, you're like, wait, is he going to cheat on his wife? That's kind of shitty. Like, I know they're having trouble, but come on, man. And then it's like,
I just want to be friends.
I want to do is coddle.
Like, but the movie sets it up like they're gonna fuck. Like, the movie sets it up like a weird gangster meet cute. And then he, like, falls asleep the first time he brings her home, and you think, well, he's drunk. Like, but it's not clear until he, like, flat out tells her, like, you are a good friend. I'm married. Like, until he says that about 2/3 of the way through the movie, you still think he's trying to bang this woman.
Yeah.
Which is so weird, and it's like, okay, again, like, I don't know what you're doing. She's not, like, it would make sense, it really would, if it was established that she was, like, one of the gangster's girlfriends or had, like, inside information.
She's an informant, and he figures that out right away.
Right, but she's informing on him for the mob to, like, to check up on him, and she's basically just a degenerate gambler who owes them a lot of money. She's not even in tight with the mob.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't have a lot of purpose. And it just, like, that makes no sense whatsoever.
It seems like it can make sense, but it seems like one of those most bizarre, strange gambles. Like, I'm going to just throw the dice and see if maybe this girl I'm flirting with actually knows somebody in the mob. Oh, look, yeah. She does.
Oh, happy day. I was right.
Yeah.
And so, but this is, like, Robert Davi illustrates, him and Schwarzenegger working together, illustrates how maddeningly inconsistent the morality of Schwarzenegger's undercover work is. Like, you know, a lot of times, if you ever watch, like, The Sopranos, or you've ever seen, like, Donnie Brasco, like, you know, there's this thing about, you know, they're involved, but they're not supposed to be involved in violent crimes. Like, there's, you know, a lot of, like, there's these rules, right? At one point, they're roughing up this guy at, like, a gay nightclub, and it's clear Robert Davi's about to shoot the guy, and you see this look on Schwarzenegger's face, like, oh, I need to do something to stop this creative diversion. So he, like, drags the guy across the whole vanity table and then throws red paint in his face, like, this is what you're going to look like dead, and then they leave. So you're like, okay, well, he's trying to keep... I get it. Like, that's what you would do as an undercover. And then he's also the guy that, like, gives them the idea of blowing up a police station, tells them how to go in and steal back all the drugs and cocaine, or all the drugs and money that the police have confiscated from the mob boss. He's also the guy that at a certain point in the movie, and by a certain point I mean damn near the end of this movie, they show up at a cemetery, and Robert Davi's like, okay, you're going to go kill that cop over there. And he's like, okay. And he's walking over, totally fine with going to shoot this cop, until he realizes when the cop turns around that it's Darren McGavin, and he's like, oh no, what am I doing? And it's like, wait a minute. So if it wasn't Darren McGavin, you were just going to be fine with shooting a cop? Like, at a certain point, shouldn't you be like, yeah, but I can't actually do these things because I'm a good guy? Like, that's what doesn't make sense to me. Like, I don't know where his head is at throughout most of this movie. Like, how far is he willing to go to get in deeper to an organization that he really doesn't have to get that deep into in the first place, considering what his mission is? It just, it's maddening. It's like, I don't understand what you're doing, and I don't think you do either.
Yeah. No, it's a very, very strange through line with a lot of fascinating scenes in between.
Yeah, and it's just a lot of, like, you know, Schwarzenegger having slick back hair and wearing nice suits and, like, every once in a while beating somebody up. But it's, there's nothing complicated about his undercover work. Like, there's, you know, when you, even like the movie version of Miami Vice, you'd have all these moments where you're like, you really think that their cover's going to be blown. It creates tension. Like, there's no moment where, you know, the female like interest in this movie is kidnapped and he has to, like, there's just nothing complicated about his work. It's literally, by the time he gets found out, he kills the two people that find him out. And you're like, okay, well, maybe this will buy him some time. And the very next scene is him murdering everybody else.
Everyone.
Even though he hasn't been found out, because the two people that discovered him are both now dead. He's still, it's still like a, well, I guess the jig is up. I better kill everybody. And it's like, okay, but I feel like you could have accomplished this an hour ago in the movie, which was like 2 days ago in the movie, by just killing everyone. Like, clearly you're good at it. And he also, like, goes along on the mission to murder the other mob boss, and, like, they're successful at it. I'm like, dude, stop being the undercover cop who kills everyone before you're supposed to kill everyone. Come on, man. There are rules here. But that's what Raw Deal is. It's just Schwarzenegger biding his time until he decides to kill every human being he's ever met. And then he does.
Yeah.
And but it's a lot of fun to watch those moments when he does decide, like, fuck this. When it becomes a Death Wish movie, that's when this is the most fun.
Yes.
Because I genuinely feel like if this film had been made 10 years earlier, it would have starred Charles Bronson or... as we mentioned before, it's so funny you said that, because I even wrote down in my notes, it also the one man versus the mob kind of factor to it, easily could have been a blaxploitation movie starring Fred the Hammer Williamson.
Yeah.
This could have been like the third in the Black Caesar trilogy, and just Fred Williamson murdering the mob. And that would have been just, and that's when this movie is his most fun, is that's what we see.
Now, it's interesting. It was interesting. I watched this back to back with Cobra, and the thing that struck me the most was where Cobra was so visually arresting,
mm-hmm.
and beautiful. This movie feels like they set up the camera and lock it off and just kind of let Schwarzenegger walk around the room and just crack jokes.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very weird thing that in this era, when so many of these movies are so slick, this movie really isn't.
Not even a little bit. Not even a little bit. And I think it's because, by the way, there's a couple scenes where I am 99.9% sure that they're using the same location as like five different locations. I'm pretty sure that that mobster bar is also part of the head mafia guy's house. It's also the restaurant where she gets mad at him. It's also part of the mall. I'm like, this is the same fucking location, and they're just dressing it up differently.
I would not doubt that, actually.
That's how opposite of slick this movie is, and I feel like part of that is because, and this is, we're going to talk about more about this in a second, but this is Dino De Laurentiis' first movie of his new De Laurentiis Entertainment Group company. This is the first movie that Wing put out, and I feel like they were really trying to make this movie as cheaply as possible to get back some of the, you know, basically the money that they'd put up initially to invest in it, and I think they were thinking that this was going to be a big hit. It was not. It was not at all, but I feel like that's part of why there's so little attention paid to making this movie visually interesting, because it feels like, even though it came out after Commando, after Terminator, after Conan, it looks so much worse than anything that Schwarzenegger had been in up to that point, that I would not be surprised if somebody watched this and be like, did this come out in 1979, 1980? Because this seems really early in his career. It's about midway through, but yeah. It feels like such a step backwards, like, you know, just artistically, that, yeah, I get why people would think this is a really early, and that's what I thought when I first watched it. I was like, oh, this must have been, like, what, a few years after Hercules in New York, and they're like, no, this is after Terminator. It's like, shut the fuck up, really?
And yeah, it's sure enough. It's a weird one. I was really surprised that you were so excited to do this one.
I still love this movie.
I know you do, and I'm not in love with it. I don't dislike it. I don't hate this movie. So don't, you know, please don't take my negativity on that. I enjoy this movie, but this is like, this is among the weaker ones. Like, I remember seeing this when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being bored by it then. Like, I was like, this was 86, so I must have been 11. I was just like, wow, this is kind of boring. And I hadn't watched it for years afterwards because I always remembered it being the boring Schwarzenegger. And revisiting, I was like, oh, actually, this is a lot more fun. I just wasn't old enough to appreciate all the talky-talky bits. Well, come on.
Because if there's one actor you want in a talkie-talkie movie, there's one actor you're going to put in your Aaron Sorkin screenplay movie, it's absolutely Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I think master thespians.
Again, a word Schwarzenegger could not pronounce at all would be thespian. Yeah.
Master thespian, yeah, he cannot pronounce those.
I am for equal rights for everyone. No, I said thespian.
Including the thespians. I said
you know what? That's fine, Governor. Just whatever. But yeah, this is why I love this movie, is because there are so many things, because it feels so rushed, because it feels so cheap, and because it feels like such a desperate attempt to just make a quick buck, there are so many things in this movie that just should not exist, and things we haven't seen in any other Schwarzenegger movie. Like, for example, in what other movie are you going to see a scene where Schwarzenegger is in a Cadillac driving around to the Rolling Stones' I Can't Get No Satisfaction and just murdering a quarry full of bad guys?
Oh, yeah. A quarry.
A quarry full of bad guys. And he's listening to I Can't Get No Satisfaction. And I can't, it's like, I'm trying to remember, and maybe this is something I should have thought about more, but I'm trying to remember the iconic scenes in Schwarzenegger's oeuvre. I'm trying to think of those scenes that involved popular music. And most of them I can't. Most of them, it's like, you know, you'd have like the scores in Terminator, like, maybe you could make an argument for like a little bit of Guns N' Roses in Terminator 2, but that was really mostly John Connor. Like, all of the great scenes that I can think of, the iconic scenes for Schwarzenegger, don't involve popular music. Like, he's not a soundtrack movie guy.
No, he's kind of a drum beat kind of guy.
You know, which this also has. Exactly.
Like, there are people out there that cannot tell the difference between the music from Conan, music from The Terminator, music from several of his movies in the 90s, because they all like had that, like, it was almost like he was over the side. He's like, no, can I get something with more of a drum beat? Like, that is my thing.
My favorite artist is Shida E. I need more drum machines now. That's all of,
yeah. Yeah. This is the episode where we break out all of our bad Schwarzenegger accents.
How dare you?
It's just, it's all bad Schwarzenegger all episode, so I apologize.
Because we're talking about a bad Schwarzenegger movie.
Yeah.
It makes sense. But yeah, no, so it was interesting that just suddenly he's dropping in Rolling Stones, which is probably the thing they spent the most movie on and most money on in the entire movie, was getting the rights to Can't Get No Satisfaction. Or how about the fact that after, once again, reminding you, dear listener, this is an unsanctioned undercover operation where Schwarzenegger murders the entire mafia and the guy at the FBI who was the mole, and then at the end of the movie, you'd think, oh, instant incarceration for the rest of his life. Nope, he's reinstated into the goddamn FBI, and it's like, hold on a second. Wait a minute.
We needed a one-man army to send in and just kill lots of people. We're going to rehire you. We had no idea that when you savagely beat a guy, you could actually do that to 50 guys.
Yeah.
Nothing but a Cadillac and a Rolling Stones cassette.
We fired you because you were too violent when you beat up that one guy. Now we're rehiring you because you killed everyone.
FBI. Well, no witnesses.
With no witnesses. Yeah, you made sure that he made sure there were no witnesses left
to pin that on you. Then, yeah, now you're our guy.
He made, and you know what's so amazing about that moment is it follows a moment where him and his platonic like interest in this movie have an honest to Zod Casablanca scene.
Oh yeah, putting her on a plane.
What the actual fuck is going on?
Yeah.
By the way, she's sidelined throughout most of the movie, except for one time where she shows up. Inexplicably knowing that he needs saved at the cemetery. She didn't even know he was going there, but somehow knew not only that he was there, but that he needed to be saved at that moment. No explanation for why that is. And then he gets to the airport at the end of the movie where she's just been waiting for the movie to end, and he shows up with money and is like, you have to go. I cannot go with you. You will be safe. You will take this money. And she's like, what about you? Are you going to be okay? And he's like, I'll be fine. You have to go now.
Go now.
Get to the chopper.
Get to the chopper.
It's not even a chopper. That's fine. But it's like, what
get
the fuck?
Get to the jet stream.
Why the fuck is there a Casablanca moment in this Schwarzenegger action film? I don't understand. But something about that, and again, this is a guilty pleasure of mine, and something I probably can't even fully articulate my attraction to this. But things that just should not be. Like, movies that are trying so hard to hold it together and pretend to be real when they are obviously a fever dream that should not exist, that like, really turns my crank. And that's exactly why I like Raw Deal, is you get a lot of the action tropes that are a lot of fun, and dressing them up are all these moments where you're like, this shouldn't be in a movie. What the fuck is this? What is happening right now?
Yeah, and it is fun. That's the thing about this movie, is it is fun to rewatch, and it is fun to revisit, because there are some glorious what the fuck moments. There are some the final action scene is pretty fucking cool.
It's like, great.
We keep talking about how inexplicably, you know, what the fuck it is, but man, is it a cool fucking, it's classic Schwarzenegger. It's not as goofy and campy as the killing everyone at the end of Commando. It's a bit more serious.
Yeah.
And that makes it that makes it fun in a different way.
Yeah.
But it's actually well done. It's almost like the entire movie served to facilitate that action scene.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, and that's very much like a Death Wish movie or a Black Caesar. That's the most fun you're gonna have, is when, you know, shit has gotten real, shit is hitting the fan, and it's just like, it's on. The gloves are off, lots of other idioms I could throw out at you. But it's just watching the action hero you came to see do the thing you came to see them do. And that part is executed very well. It's you know, in typical late 80s Schwarzenegger fashion, it's tremendously violent. And it's very well orchestrated to where, like, there's a nice mix of, like, comedic action with, like, there's some pretty remarkable, like, there's a scene where a car drives under a steel girder and it hits at such a velocity that, and I know this was not planned because there's just no way you could script this, but it hits at such a velocity that the roof not only shears off, but like hangs on top of the girder. And it's like really, really cool to see. And then of course that shootout at the end where he's killing every single person who's ever uttered a line or not in this movie is pretty remarkable. And the other thing is, I actually like Darren McGavin, his performance in this movie a lot. Like, he feels like the only guy who didn't get the memo that this is, you know, a Dino De Laurentiis bargain basement action movie with Kmart Carpenter music playing, you know, every once in a while, just like do 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 do. I was like,
I love that's how you call, because that's exactly what it is.
That's what it is. It's Kmart Carpenter. That's all you're getting score wise throughout this whole movie. But Darren McGavin's like really, like, he's really broken up about his son, and like your heart goes out to him. And then throughout the rest of the movie, he says like he's these really weighty lines, like justice be damned or whatever. And it's just like, man, you're really going for it, Darren.
I love character actors that bring it regardless of what the movie is.
Yeah,
that don't just walk on and sleepwalk through it. That they're like, no, I don't care if this is crap. They're getting me.
Another person who does that in this movie besides Robert Davi and Darren McGavin is Paul Shaner, who plays Roka, who is the actual... That's the thing. Robert Davi is actually like the number three in this organization. Like, we're down to like Polly Walnuts level by the time we get to Robert Davi. But Paul Shaner plays the actual number two, Roka, who was also Sosa in Scarface. And that guy's scary. Like, that guy has a presence that you're like, I don't want to fuck with that guy. Like, this may be a cheesy 80s action movie, but I'm not fucking with Roka. Like, that guy's really scary. And so we have all of that going on. It makes it very entertaining. And the other thing that I love about this movie, because I'm such a big nerd for, you know, movies that exist and you don't think much of them, but they actually play an important role in either the history of another film or the history of film itself. This is the movie that had to fail so that Total Recall could live. And it's something I didn't even realize until I started doing the research for this show. Total Recall had a much longer road to the screen than most people think. The Philip K. Dick story, We Remember It For You Wholesale, was actually optioned in 1976 by Dino De Laurentiis. He was going to make it. Like, that was going to be his big project. And he hired Ronald Shusett and Dan O'Bannon to write the script.
Dan O'Bannon, of course, being...
The writer of a little movie called Alien.
And writer and director of...
Return of the Living Dead. I was going to say Dead and Buried. No, he's done a lot of movies.
Like, yeah, no, he is one of those great junk food screenwriters of the 70s and 80s.
Absolutely. So what happened was, I mean, they're working on the screenplay for this back in the 70s, and then they realized that because of where special effects were at the time, probably be too expensive, probably would never be made. So they stopped working on that and worked on this other idea O'Bannon had about a space monster terrorizing a spaceship crew. That becomes Alien. So in the meantime, you know, jump ahead to 1986, they're starting to, De Laurentiis is starting to put into motion again Total Recall. Schwarzenegger, at the time of Raw Deal, had one movie left on his multi-picture deal with De Laurentiis, and he wanted it to be Total Recall. But the thing is, in the original script, Quaid wasn't a bodybuilder, construction worker. He was an accountant. So Dino De Laurentiis is like, you're completely wrong for this character. There's no way I'm casting you in this. And so instead, the last movie of his multi-picture deal, basically he did Raw Deal just to get out of his Raw Deal with De Laurentiis. He didn't want to have this multi-picture deal anymore. So instead, Dino De Laurentiis tries and fails to get all these different director and star combinations in place. The director chain included Richard Rush of Freebie and the Bean, which is a movie we've talked about, Bruce Bresiford, and David goddamn Cronenberg.
Yeah.
This is the thing that really blew my mind. David Cronenberg left The Fly in 1986 for a time because he was going to direct Total Recall. And then unfortunately, you know, the director that they brought in to replace Cronenberg, his daughter passed away. And then there was this big, you know, all of a sudden Total Recall is placed into turnaround after Raw Deal fails at the box office, and Cronenberg goes back to The Fly. So Laurentiis is setting up Total Recall to shoot in Australia with Patrick Swayze starring. He's got Arnold Schwarzenegger in Raw Deal, and because it's the first film of this new company, DEG, he really needs Raw Deal to be a success in order for Total Recall to get funded, and it blows up in his face. So what happens is he is convinced to sell the rights to Total Recall to... Mario Casar over at Carol Co., who was urged to buy them by Arnold Schwarzenegger. So Arnold, basically, his better undercover job was going to Carol Co. and Mario Casar and being like, look, I know he's going to have to sell the rights to this movie. He can't afford to make it anymore. So buy it and then cast me in it. And that's exactly what happened. And that's why it takes until 1990 to get Total Recall made. And that's why if Raw Deal had been a success and that company hadn't folded 2 years later, we might have had a completely different Total Recall that would not have starred on Arnold Schwarzenegger. So again, Raw Deal, as insignificant as it may seem, is actually the movie that is vital. Its failure is vital to the success of Total Recall. That kind of blew my mind. Like, I was going down the rabbit hole and finding all these things, and all these different actors that were originally supposed to play Quaid, and these actresses like Cynthia Rothrock at one point was going to be the Sharon Stone character, but she heard later that the reason she was fired was because the male actors were intimidated by the fact that she was a better martial artist than they were. And it's just like all of these crazy fucking things that all start with Raw Deal and lead to Total Recall. It still doesn't make Raw Deal a great film, but Raw Deal is a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and it's kind of crazy.
So to close out our discussion on Raw Deal, Cargill, I want to play a game where I'm going to give you two other titles by which this film was at once called, and you tell me if either of those work better than Raw Deal. The first one is Triple Identity, and the second one is Let's Make a Deal.
You're kidding me. That was one of the actual titles.
It was originally intended to be called Let's Make a Deal. So I imagine that the mafia boss was played by Monty Hall.
You know, the Let's Make a Deal actually is the only one there that makes sense.
Go.
He does not have three identities.
Well, I think what they were going for, and this is bad. This doesn't work. No. But it was.
I see where you're going.
Yeah, the FBI. He was in the FBI. Then he was in a sheriff, and then he was a mobster.
Yeah,
but
no.
It's like.
But
fuck
Let's
you.
Make a Deal works because the entire movie hinges on the deal he makes with Darren McGavin.
Yeah,
like that, and because it's not a raw deal.
Yeah,
like it's a deal.
I will put you back on the force if you kill everyone.
You go and do this. I'll put my job on the line and put in for your reinstatement. Like, I will bring you back into the job that because I mean the thing is the beginning of this movie really does set this up. That's the whole point of the drunken wife, is the wife is really upset that she's living in a small town, that he's not an FBI agent anymore, that she's not part of this scene that she used to be in Washington, and now she's stuck in podunk middle of nowhere, so her husband can drive around in a Jeep and chase guys on motorcycles.
Yep.
As if, like you said, he was a Duke boy.
Yep.
So that all makes sense. So Let's Make a Deal makes sense. It's terrible.
Yeah.
And especially in the 80s when Let's Make a Deal was still a thing played on television regularly, that would have been the dumbest name possible.
I want to propose another title called Didn't Think This Through.
Didn't Think This Through.
Because even if this plan goes off without a hitch, how in the fuck is Darren McGavin going to get Arnold Schwarzenegger reinstated to the FBI when this mission was not sanctioned? Even if it's completely successful and no one at the FBI finds out about it, how is he going to parlay that into getting Schwarzenegger back on the force? Doesn't make any sense. Like, if you could do that, you could have done that at any point. Like, if you can do that without any kind of evidence that I've done anything good for anybody because this is unsanctioned and we can't tell anybody, you should be able to pull those same strings anyway.
See, now you want it unsanctioned.
Unsanctioned.
That
okay,
would be
there
a title
you go.
If this were, you know, unsanctioned.
We got it. It only took 30 years, but we figured out the real title for fucking Raw Deal. Good job. We're good at this.
Raw Deal. Be warned. Be ready. Beware.
And that brings us to the junk food pairing, which I think is pretty simple here. It's going to be a big old slice of rum cake. Rum cake, which is the perfect dessert for anyone who likes to both drink and bake, because it has the alcohol baked right into the goddamn cake.
There,
so you know what?
Is.
You should drink and bake, because, that's as much as I want to listen to the world's worst FBI agent and the world's worst one-liner, I think I'm going to both drink and bake. Well, that's going to do it for Raw Deal. Hope you guys have enjoyed this episode. If you want to hear...
I hope you've enjoyed this episode.
I hope you have enjoyed it. Get to the ending. So if you want to hear more of our episodes, you can go to iTunes and Stitcher. We will be... Have we figured out exactly what we're covering next week? Should we go ahead and announce that, or should we wait on that? Because I don't know if we've actually solidified what we're covering next week.
I don't know. I have no idea what we're doing next week.
We've passed around like three drafts so far of the official schedule. So we will keep that a mystery for now. But as soon as we remember what it is, we will drop some clues on Twitter. So follow us there at Junk Food Cinema. You can also like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And if you got a few extra shekels to throw into the hat, go to patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. We are so close to our flex goal of 200 an episode. And guys, thank you so much for those of you who have already pledged. really, really means a lot. We very much appreciate it. It's the reason we're able to do this series and continue on with the show. Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/massaworm. That's MASSAWYRM. And facebook.com/massaworm.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at Bri Guy Salisbury. You can also find me on Facebook. My Facebook page is facebook.com/BrianSalisburyCritic. And yeah, that's going to do it for this week's show. So I'm going to leave you reminding you of one very important life lesson, is that the government gave Mark Kaminsky a raw deal. Nobody gives him a raw deal except the people that gave him a raw deal. I feel like it's a bad tagline. I feel like it might be a bad tagline. Guys, we got a bad tagline. Can we get a new one?
Do you remember a time when sleeping on the floor with your friends wouldn't have been considered weird? The management of this website invites you to a new dimension in podcasting. An experience so fun, it can only be compared to a childhood sleepover. It's not just about horror.
Tom Atkins proves that any man is leading man material.
It's not just about action.
If you're going to rank Van Damme movies,
yeah, it's up there.
I'd put it top five.
It's not just about comedy.
There's no other person in the world that loves Weekend at Bernie's more than you.
It's not just about science fiction.
Angus Scrimm with, like, a beautiful comb over.
It's about nostalgia. Can you survive the Saturday night movie sleepover? It's not a movie. It's a podcast about movies.
You can follow Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers at SaturdaySleepovers.podwitz.com. That's SaturdaySleepovers.podwitz.com. On Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, Player FM, and Stitcher.